I wanted to talk about something today, get to the Parsha through a different means, something a little bit different, a little more abstract potentially, and it was inspired by a few different things. One of which, a friend of mine once told me that although his parents went through a greater Jewish education, right? Compared to his grandparents, his great-grandparents, much more formal education. He said that his great-grandparents, his grandparents knew much better how to be a Jew, what it meant to be a Jew. It was just osmosis, the surroundings, the world they were in, just a different place, and they were just naturally. They didn't necessarily know what every text said. They didn't know what every book, they didn't know how to learn Gemara. But they knew what it meant to be a Jew. And I wanted to discuss how I think this idea is subtly found in our Parsha. And to do that, I want to step back and read a piece, actually, from the diary of the Piasetzner Rebbe. Piasetzner Rebbe was a Hasidic Rebbe in Warsaw. He specifically in the neighborhoods of Piasetzner. And he actually there's a few books we have of his. One of them is his Drushos from the Warsaw Ghetto, discussing what do you say to inspire a community that's literally boxed in the middle of the war. He was killed in the Holocaust, but we also have his diary. And his diary gives an insight into not just how do you lead a troubled community, and troubled in the sense of the worst trauma, but who he was as a person. He was a very passionate, fiery person. His book is called Eish Kodesh, Holy Fire, and his name is Rabbi Kalmus Kalman Shapira. And I want to start off with a piece from his diary. And the article that was ultimately the inspiration for this discussion also starts with this piece. It's where I cut and pasted it from. But I'd like to see how it relates to our Parsha. He says, "My heart pounds for my impending 40th birthday. My entire body shakes from the oncoming declining years. This is not so much time before he was ultimately murdered by the Nazis. Still, I will try to muster all my strength to commit myself and my life to God. Perhaps something will remain. But to what shall I commit myself?" This is the Hasidic Rebbe talking. This is not someone who's has so much better that he can do. He says to learn more. "I learn with every free minute I have. I think that as far as possible, I don't waste any time." You can't just take on more. So there's only so many hours in the day. I know some people who like sneak a 25th hour every day. Like, it's pretty impressive. He's filled his day with everything he could. To abstain from physical pleasures. My own desires are not fooling me, thank God. I'm not so attached to them. To the degree that there were luxuries in the Warsaw Ghetto, he wasn't so attached to these guys. So what am I missing? Simply to be a Jew. I see myself as a self-portrait that shows all colors and features real to life. Just one thing is missing, the soul. This is a person who continues to inspire in his legacy. Posthumously, some of his books were published, some of them were published earlier. Inspires thousands, he's saying he wants the soul. He was really, like many of the leaders of his time period, he was dealing with a change. Think of the change of the world. This transition from the simple life in the old country to sort of a modernity. He was dealing with it in the most traumatic sense. But something interesting about him from a philosophical standpoint is that particularly in the Hasidic world, the Lithuanian world is a little bit different, there was predominantly a focus on the Rebbe. The Rebbe was the guy who was connected. Right, the tzaddik, the righteous person, was connected, and everyone else connected themselves to them. It was a train, and they kind of dragged them along. He saw this as a new paradigm needed that wasn't inspiring the youth of that generation, that wasn't inspiring who was there. He was actually an educator. He was a mechanic. His part-time job was Rebbe, or his part-time job was teacher, but he taught children. He taught kids. That's what he did. If he wanted to deal with the secularization, the diminished passion of the youth, in a very interesting way. Right? There's actually a story, you say, of a different Rebbe, not so far off in time, that once bemoans how the topic we'll talk about is lights today. but how the Baal Shem Tov, the leader of this movement, was someone who loved light. Light we'll struggle to define in a few minutes. And he said there was one time they were in a room, and it was very dark, right? In Eastern Europe, particularly in the wintertime, not all that much worse than Chicago, you didn't have so much light. So you wanted candles, so you wanted to be able to see. But there's only one candle they can get their hands on. So he said, sort of miraculously, go take some icicles. There's lots of icicles. We'll bring them up. We'll use them to warm up. So miraculously, they said they lit the icicles. This generation, they have lots and lots of lights. Lots of candles in the room. They have heaters in the room, but it's cold. There's no passion. So the Eish Kodesh, the P.S. Etzner Rebbe, is trying to deal with this phenomenon. And this article that this is opening to, it's from one of my Rebbeim, Rav Moshe Weinberger, who sees this phenomenon happening now. There's a certain lack of passion, a certain lack of, not just commitment, but a soul. The soul, the Jewish flavor, that which our ancestors kind of had naturally. He says he wants to bring that back. And the way he sort of discusses this is in the context of Emunah. Emunah of faith. Not in the intellectual sense of I can read every single book on the arguing God and does God exist and that does, is there a mitzvah of emunah or there not, is there a technicality and how you read the, lots and lots of philosophical complicated things, not for us. So what is it? It's this quality. It's this unspoken quality, you can't define it perfectly. This quality that just pervades what we used to know. And he says, this is sort of the two areas of Judaism. There's the technical aspects, which are completely important. They're indispensable. We have the mitzvot, we have halacha, we have the technical learning, which is important. But then there's the spiritual aspect of it. The passion, the intangible quality of a relationship. A relationship with Hashem. I knew one person who once, it was an Israeli fellow, and he loved Karbach Davening. The singing on Friday night, really energetic, animated. He loved this. And he once asked the rabbi, why can't we do this every day? And the rabbi said, well, if you do it every day, it's gonna belittle. You're going to get used to it, whatever. He said, oh, okay, good answer. Got in his car and drove away Friday night. He was missing the technical part of it, but he really had the passion. And some people have the technical part, but missing the passion. So Weinberger's goal, like the P.S. Etzner Rebbe, is to figure out how do we bridge this gap. And the first step is to define it. Right? What is this quality that we're missing? And if you look throughout many, many sources in Jewish texts, the quality that we're looking for, this quality of the passion, the faith, this intangible Jewish quality, so to speak, is referred to as light, as or. Right? The Pasuk in Mishlei tells us, Ki ner mitzvah v'torah or. Right? A mitzvah is a candle, and the Torah is light. Right? The Gemara tells us it's kind of like you're walking along a dark road in the woods, or really a path in the woods. You can't see where you're going. You get to a fork in the road. So suddenly there's lightning. There's a flash. And you're able to see, oh, I either the fork there or the fork there. You have that moment. That's a mitzvah. So the Torah, or the clarity, the darkness of the world is illuminated by the Torah. This is not just the Torah tells you where to go, but the Torah tells you, how do you live? How do you inspire yourselves in a world that seems sometimes dark, seems sometimes hostile? It seems like God is hard to find. You're living in a world like the P.S. Etzner Rebbe is in, where everything he knew was falling apart. The youth is not passionate. The authorities are clamping down. It's becoming more and more oppressive. How do you inspire that? And that's the light, this quality that sometimes see people have. They're bright. They're positive. There's something about them that exudes from them. This intangible quality that is really, you can sense it, but what does it really mean? You can't put words to it. Sort of a charm, sort of inspiration. It's contagious even. And someone has this, and just, I remember one time I was somewhere that I myself felt a little bit down. And I saw someone who had this quality. And I couldn't put my finger. He didn't say anything particularly inspirational. Nice singer. But it was there. And I just went over to him. And just, you reminded me that there is this light. There's this quality. And Weinberg, in his article, says about this quality, this inspiration, this feeling, this energy that can lift somebody up entirely. that can transform something. He says of it in the Sfarim HaKadoshim, the holy books, this indescribable ingredient, this soul, is often referred to as or, lights. A light. He gives an example. A couple might enjoy the security that comes with a marriage in which mutual responsibilities are taken seriously. They have a whole contract of you take out the garbage this day, and you do the dishes, and you everything is all perfectly working just like a business. It's like a business. That's not a particularly romantic marriage, right? That's a business. That's not what you want. Since that is all the marriage consists of, it is a dark and dismal home they share. When a relationship is lichtig, light lit up, it's on fire, it's alive, when it has an neshama, even the C minor of everyday life is illuminated by the light that binds them together. There's something that's greater than the sum of the parts, something that just inspires us, a quality that we're sometimes afraid to talk about because there's no words for it. But how do you define it? You have to show it. So you have to see it, experience it. I've looked through in YU, there is an interesting sort of dynamic where you have the base medrash, you have the library, and on top of the library is what they call the fifth floor. The fifth floor is one of the most impressive Jewish libraries in the world. There's hundreds of thousands of svarim there, very rare texts, and you can see like a different feeling, a different energy from the base medrash, which is the shul, where everyone learns. There's a light, there's an inspirational light. You just walk in there and you're inspired. You can sense it. The library, which is like a nice place to study, it's a library. And the fifth floor, which is sort of like an in-between place. It happens to me, my Rebbe spends a lot of time there, so I always liked it. I was very partial to it. But there's something that comes, the kedusha, the emunah, the faith, the relationship with God, is just different in a place that is on fire, that has this light, and somewhere that doesn't. And he says that our job in this generation, the job the P.S. Setzner was trying to do, was bring back this light. Bring back this light to the community. This quality that was natural, that came by osmosis in the past, that we need to figure out how do we do that. And I think the Parsha is going to lead us to this point. Because in our Parsha begins, Bahaloscha, right? Daber el Aaron, v'amarta elai, Bahaloscha es aneros, el mul panei ha-menorah, Ya'iru Shiva Sanera. So we have to have the Aaron HaKohen goes to light the menorah. The paradigm of light. The paradigm of light in the Beis HaMikdash in Judaism is the menorah. The symbol used to be on many of the coins actually had the menorah. That was the symbol of Judaism. Was this candelabra. Lights. Right? It's not the Hanukkah menorah but the Beis HaMikdash menorah. The seven branched one. And this menorah was used not for the physical light, but for the spiritual light. The Gemara asks, really paraphrases God, as saying why we had in the Beis HaMikdash, there was two interesting phenomena. One of them was that there was the menorah itself and a shulchan. And the Gemara asks, God needs light, like he can't see? Like it's really dark in the room? It's very strange. And a shulchan, he's hungry? He needs the bread? Like, God doesn't eat. God is not corporate. God is not a being. What does it mean? That's A. And two, the windows in the Beis HaMikdash went, they were wide outside, and they went narrow inside. If you want to light something up, you want to light a room up, I mean, now we have lights, so we don't really connect to this architecture. But if you wanted to light something up with natural light, you have a narrow outside and a wide inside. You want it to spread outward to give all light in the room. The Beis HaMikdash was the opposite. Right? Shlomo HaMelech was the wisest person in his generation. He didn't know how to like light up a room. Basic architecture, I assume. I don't actually know any architecture. But this is a basic point. What was he doing? So the Gemara tells us this is not the point of the menorah. This is not the point of the windows. Rather, what the menorah was is for testimony. Testimony about the God's presence, the Shechina, the light of God, so to speak, amongst the Jewish people. There was a particular candle that was always lit, but there was also just a certain spiritual shine that came from the menorah, that came from the Beis HaMikdash. That was the testimony, that was the point of the menorah. They had other sources of light there. The menorah was just to radiate a physical expression of spirituality. And the windows were to share that with the world. Because when you're spread outward, it radiates that light to the world. Not that they needed a street light, not that they needed to see better, but they needed this reminder. A reminder that there is this light. The person I mentioned, the person who's just inspiration, he walks around alive with a relationship to God. He just walks around with that energy. He's a reminder to everybody that this exists. He's a testimony to the Jewish people, a testimony to the world. It says, Kol Boi Olam, everyone that comes to the world, every single person who goes through, the Beis HaMikdash was a place. You wanted to be inspired? You wanted to remember what is life all about? Go to the Beis HaMikdash. It's a new type of vacation. So you have this paradigm that they are spreading out into the world. You wanted to remind, light up the darkness of the world. The world is a physical place. God's presence is not obvious. It happens to be a very much connected nature, but it's, you go out in the woods, you just see the world is functioning by itself. You don't realize there's someone behind it. There's something behind it. God is behind it. The menorah was this reminder, this spiritual beacon of light. But it's not the only one that exists in the world. Because if you look in Zechariah, the Jewish people as a whole are called a menorah. Right? We are a menorah. It says, Vayomer alai ma ta ro'eh. And Malach went over, Zechariah had a vision, and the angel asked him, what did you see? Interesting conversation, right? I asked my son sometimes, did you have any good dreams? And he has all different interesting answers. Right? The Malach comes over to him and says, no, what was your dream? What was your vision? He's discussing with the Malach, pretty good, an angel. He says, Re'iti v'hine menorah zahav kula begula al rosh v'shiva menorah aleha. He saw, I saw a menorah. Not just the regular menorah, but I saw a spiritual menorah. I saw the Jewish people as a menorah. Something that's lighting up. And we know the Pasuk in Mishlei tells us, Ner Hashem, Nishmas Adam. The candle of God. The candle of godliness in the world is the soul of mankind. A person. You want to find God in the world, you look for a person. You look for a person who's radiating their soul, their inner essence, their inner lights. Right? This is throughout pop culture even, this reference, this light, is something that no one can define. No one can figure out what it is. We can't prove it. But it seems that everyone recognizes it. So this candle, this menorah is our task, right? We're supposed to be a light unto the nations. We're supposed to be a light to the world. We're supposed to be the menorah shining the world, proving God, not through our intellectual arguments, although we're pretty good at that too, but through our light. Through our quality that is this Jewish quality, this Jewish charm. This emunah is when we have this quality. And this is really what my Rabbi Weinberger's, his goal is. This is what he talks about all day, just trying to lighten people up. He's a person who's, he can give a class on any single topic he wants to. He can give it on Kashrut, he can give it on Shabbat, he can do all these things. I think one time I heard him talk about it. He talks about inspiration, spirituality, trying to be able to deal with this, because sometimes we find ourselves uninspired. Right? Sometimes we go through life, it's the monotony of day-to-day life, the challenges of day-to-day life. There's something that comes overbearing. Maybe we just haven't developed the qualities, the characteristics that we need to have this life. So when there are times we don't feel it, when there are times that we don't feel this light, we're going through the darkness, so to speak, of the world, what do we do? And this, I think, also relates to the Parsha. But first, I would like to look at a seemingly, I don't want to say contradictory, but a complex statement of Hillel Zaken. Hillel, in the Pirkei Avos, in the Mishnah, says, Hu haya omer, im ein anili, mili. If I'm not for myself, who's going to be for me? V'kashani la'atzmi, when I'm for myself, ma'ani, what am I? V'im lo achshav emasai. If not now, when? It says, if I'm not going to take responsibility for my own spirituality, my own growth, my own everything in life, who's going to do it for me? Right? Someone else is going to come over and take care of me, inspire me to do it. It's upon you. But, he says, if all I care about is myself, if all I care about is my spiritual growth, and I ignore everybody else around me, what does that make you? What kind of a person is that? It's not a complete person. If you wait for this, if you just kind of sit and wait, it's going to come up later on. Not now, when? So this paradigm, I think, is going to really figure out what our job in this world is, how do we relate to this light, and again, will be solved by our parsha. Because the Parsha says, Rashi asks the question, the Parsha is called Bahloscha. What does Bahloscha literally mean? When you go up, and you're going up, right? Now, on a super literalistic explanation, you could say the menorah was pretty tall. I don't know how tall Aaron was. Maybe he wasn't such a tall guy. So he had to go up like a step stool or something to light the menorah. But Rashi says that's not what it means. That's not what this word means. What does Bahaloscha mean? Al Shem Shahalahalav Ola. The flame goes up. A flame rises. A flame is something that goes from the bottom upward. It says the Kasiv Bahadlakasan Lashin Aliyah. They're calling the lighting of the menorah going up. Why? Shisarik Lahadlik Achtehi Shalheves Ola Me'aleha. The job of the Kohen would be to take a candle, take a fire, and he'd put it next to the menorah. And on that menorah, they would sit there next to the candle, and he would sit there and just wait until the flame went up by itself. It inspired itself. It lit itself up. Right? He wasn't sitting there trying to force the flame onto it. He'd just sit there, and he would prepare the lamps, he'd prepare the candles and the wicks, until it was ready such that if you put a candle right there, it would catch on fire. Kind of an incendiary, a accelerant. The candle was ready to just catch fire any second then. All he had to do was bring the candle to it. The menorah did its own job, so to speak. So this, if we return to P.S.X. Nerebi, because I think what defined him as different, what distinguished him from other leaders of that time period, and it's exactly what he says we have to do. It's exactly what he says is the job of that generation. In a book called Chovos HaTalmidim, he wrote a handbook of how to be a student. How do you be a Ben or Bas Torah? How do you be a student of the Torah, student of Judaism? And in that, in the introduction, he discusses the main message that we must communicate to the generation. And he says, "Lo dai lamad es nar." It's not just that we have to teach them obedience, right? Pretty hard to teach, actually. Not just they have to listen to what they say, or that they have to give information. There was actually somebody at one of the schools I heard this past year who was going over for the beginning of the year with the class how they're going to learn. And he mentioned there's going to be no tests. And the kids freaked. The kids panicked. There's going to be no tests. How are we going to get grades? What are we going to do? Don't worry. You sit there, and you learn. And it'll be good. I said, well, what are we going to be tested on? He's like, I just told you. There are no tests. I said, well, how are we going to get... They're so used to this. Listen to the information. Write the information. Memorize the information. Where's the passion there? Where's the heart? You're putting your heart into that. It's not enough just to listen to the words he says. It's not even going to work. They're not going to become educated that way. They're going to know a lot of information until they forget it. Right? I remember there's a certain thing I learned for grad school. I had to do a certain test on mathematics. Math was very hard for me. So my wife taught me all the math I needed to know. It took like 3 days. We just pounded. I got through. I passed the test. By the next afternoon, I forgot everything. Still can't do math anymore. When you study that way, when you try to memorize information, it doesn't work. It doesn't really make a lasting impact. Not only is it going to just not work, it's going to be forgotten, but if you just try to force obedience, they're not going to respect the teacher. He's going to be an enemy. She's going to be someone who's getting in their way. There's someone that's against them. That's not helpful for anybody. You have to really inspire in their heart, really ingrain in their hearts. What is it? Sheyeda shehu hana'ar ba'atmo hu ikar mechanek. The child, the student, is the educator. They have to educate themselves. They have to learn how to be self-sufficient. They have to learn how do you inspire yourself. How do you be a menorah? How do you be a candelabra that can just light itself on fire? How do you bring it from the inside, not externally? There was a discussion once. There was a Rebbe who was particularly fond of beards. Right? He thought that it was a proper thing to have a beard. Whether or not that's a... Not for now, but his quality was he wanted to have a beard. And somebody said there was a particular student that if this person just said he should grow a beard, without question, he was going to do it. Rebbe said, I already have one. What do you mean you already have? I have my own beard. I don't need him to grow another beard for me. I want him to grow his own beard. I want him to be inspired himself. He has to be himself. I'm already doing everything I want to be doing. He has to do it himself. The Rebbe is saying that just like I feel I need to inspire in myself this quality, I have to teach the students how to inspire their own quality. I can't do it for them. It says, Lo katan v'nar hu rak netzer matay Hashem bekerem Yisrael hu. Every single person is this tree in the garden of Hashem. It's this candle waiting to be lit. He has to grow. He has to nourish this. He has to grow this quality. He has to really expand upon it and grow it and light up the world with his own light. So the question is, how do we reconcile this aspect? Because on the one hand, this is really the contradiction of the Mishnah. If I'm not for myself, who is going to inspire me? Right? He has to be for himself. He has to be there. But if I'm for myself, what am I? If I'm only about myself, if I only think into my own inspiration, what am I? Meaning, you're supposed to interact with others. What is the PSX's job? He was a mechanic. He was an educator. He acknowledged, you cannot take a child and just let him be in his own and expect this to happen. Right? He's going to find all these different distractions. He's going to get distracted all over the place. It's not going to work. So you have to inspire them to inspire themselves, but they can't just do it themselves because they need the external help, and that's his job to do it. What's he trying to say? There's a mixed message here. We have another Mishnah of Hillel himself, even, who says, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to be Kohanim. Okay, it says every single person, some people actually are Kohanim, I'm not one of them. Some people, everybody is supposed to be a Kohen. He says, Have Tamidim Shel Aaron. You should be like Aaron. Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom. You should love Shalom. You should love peace. Ohev Vabrios, Mekarvim the Torah. You should be a Kohen who's someone who brings people together, brings them close to the Torah. So there's clearly a demand. We have the obligation of teaching Torah. We have the obligation of teaching. We have the obligation of trying to inspire other people. Hillel himself said both of them. So what is it? Am I supposed to inspire myself or am I supposed to inspire other people? Which means I'm an other people to those people. They're supposed to inspire me. Who's supposed to inspire who? I don't get it. It keeps circling in my head. I think the answer is the menorah. The menorah was supposed to light itself, but it didn't light itself a spontaneous combustion. It was there, and it was sitting ready, and the Kohen brings fire over to it, and he puts the fire there just long enough for the fire to catch. He brings the candle over. He's a lamplighter. He takes it over and he gives that impetus, he gives that opportunity for the fire to catch. The menorah has to go up by itself, so to speak, but it has to be inspired. It has to be lit by somebody else. The obligation of inspiration, the obligation of this is on every single person. Every single one of us, every single person is obligation to be the one that inspires themselves, but we also have an obligation to inspire everybody else. To be that light. To be that light to catch somebody else, to hold that inspiration up for somebody else. Right? We bring ourselves close to the light of Torah. We find people that will inspire us, and we be people that can inspire others. So what does this mean for us practically? We have to have this desire to do it, and utilize opportunities. I think one of the hardest challenges in this, as someone going into education, I'm going to have to... It's not something you can formally teach as a curriculum, because it's intangible. And it's not something you can just kind of design a plan, this is how you're going to do it, because everyone's different. Some people are inspired by music, some people can't stand music. Some people are inspired by nature, some people would really rather be in an air-conditioned house. Some people are inspired by learning, some people are inspired by meditation and prayer. Some people are inspired by the zoo. My kid is definitely inspired by the zoo. Some people are inspired by relationships. Everyone's different, so how do we do this? So, I think also from our parsha, we have another little hint at how to do this, the chatzotzros. That every generation has to have their own way of waking things up. The chatzotzros, the trumpets that were blown to assemble the nation, to begin a journey, to go to battle, and also during the temple service. The Gemara tells us that if the trumpets that Moshe made, the next generation, Yeshua's time, weren't kosher. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu, I trust his kashrus, right? I assume Moshe Rabbeinu knows what he's doing. What do you mean they're not kosher? It says that not, they were for that generation, but not for another generation. We have to figure out how do we touch each generation. That's the first thing. But the second thing is to know that We're responsible for doing this. Everything we do is a role model, is an example of how the next generation is going to look at things. The person I told you about that looked up to his grandparents just knowing what it meant to be a Jew, he's someone who himself is inspired to do this. Right? So Moshe Feinstein was asked once, somebody was having trouble educating their children, and he said, "You know what the problem is? You know why we're having such a hard time educating our children? Because everyone keeps saying one phrase. It's Shver Zayna Yid. It's really hard to be Jewish. It's really tough to be a Jew. These guys, these kids coming from a new land, the new opportunities of America, the new everywhere they could go, they have all these things ahead of them. Their future paved with gold. They can just take it. They can do whatever they want. They can be whatever they want. They hear somebody complaining. It's really hard to be a Jew. How inspired are they going to be a Jew? Right? I'd rather be easy, something easy. It's really easy to be an architect. It's really easy to be whatever else it is. This is hard. Okay, fine, forget it. He says, what you should use sage is this as I need. It's sweet to be a Jew. It's something that we enjoy doing. It's something that we enjoy this life. Weinberg talks about the infinite pleasure that happens when you can inspire yourself and get this light, this quality. It's infinitely inspirational. So this is what we should be doing. We should be doing this and inspiring ourselves because we love it. This is what we want to do, right? This is our life. This is something that means something to us. When we do that, we become Kohanim. And the obligation of the menorah, so to appear derech drush, but this is actually the real halacha, is that although certain things were not, were only able to be done by a Kohen, right? Only the Kohen can set up the menorah. Only the Kohen can do parts of the avodah, the service in the temple. There's a few exceptions. One of those exceptions is the menorah itself, right? If a Kohen were to set up the lights, to set up the menorah, that has to be a Kohen, and he picks up the menorah, and he brings it outside. I'm not sure exactly how you expected to bring a giant block of gold outside without like a lot of machinery. That's a different point, the technical point. But if the Kohen figures out how he's going to lift the menorah up and bring it outside into the courtyard, outside there, a Tzar, any other person, any other Jew, anybody can go and light the menorah. They take their own candle, and they go and light it, and they can just light up the menorah. It doesn't have to be literally a Kohen. All of us have the obligation of being connected to this light, of the light of the menorah. We all have the obligation of trying to inspire ourselves, both in our own relationship with God, and also inspiring the next generation, of just showing them, what do we care about? What are we passionate about? What is it that lights us up? What is it that inspires us? It's a relationship with Hashem. It's Torah, it's mitzvah. It's not just behaviors, but it's a real connection. Mitzvah, lashon savta, it's a connection to Hashem. And if you say, how do we do this? Lava Shrebi was known to say, if you know Aleph, teach Aleph. If you know Beis, teach Beis. If you know Aleph and Beis, teach Aleph and Beis. Whatever you know, everybody can teach, everybody can inspire wherever they are in any way. The language he used, borrowing from his father-in-law, was lamplighters. Somebody who goes out, now we have like a switch somewhere in the central, I'm not even sure there's a switch, I think there's a timer. But it used to be, in the old time, you had a lantern outside, and what the job was to go out and light every candle. You're going to find every candle, find everybody, and light them up. Light the people, the candles, the lanterns. It says, us, we are, everywhere we see people, we see fellow Jews, we feel people, we're supposed to inspire them and light them up. How do we do that? By being on fire ourselves. By being our own candle, the candle of Hashem, shining godliness out, we can able to light them up because every single person is inherently this candle, ready to be lit. They want to be lit. They just need the opportunity, someone to inspire them. I think this might be the most important aspect of education. Like the end with a personal story. When I was in yeshiva in Israel, the person coming in for admissions for YU came to my yeshiva and gave me an interview. And I don't remember what I said. I don't remember really much of the interview, but I know it had nothing to do with why I got in. I was not a reason, I think. I was not a reason I got into the institution. Because 2 minutes before he got to me, he got to my friends. My friend actually didn't go to YU. He wasn't even interviewing. He just happened to be there and was a really friendly person. And he sees some stranger walk into the Beis Medrash, and he's never seen him before. And he goes, over, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? Nice to meet you. Where are you from? Oh, you're from Toronto. I'm also from Toronto. Do you know Toronto's a huge city? He starts trying to play Jewish geography there. I was like, why are you even bothering? Right? Turns out they have a mutual connection. The guy's father-in-law. The guy's father-in-law had been a math teacher for my friends. And it turns out, actually, oh, I didn't realize, it's so nice to see you. How's your father-in-law doing? He says, well, actually, he passed away a few weeks ago. He says, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You should know that your father-in-law is the reason I'm here today. He says, excuse me? He says, I was not raised religious. He was my math teacher, right? He was a guy. He was really good. He was really good at math. He was a teacher in the public school system. And this was the first Orthodox Jew I'd ever met in my life. And this man, he never talked about religion. He's in a public school. He's not allowed to talk about religion. But there's something about him. There's something, just a light. He just inspired me. Just being around him, I was inspired to look into it more. I was inspired to just try to figure out what is it that lights this guy up. And he inspired me to start learning. He inspired me to come to Israel to learn in yeshiva. So at this point, the admissions director is like crying hysterically. His late father-in-law, who within a month or two had just passed away, realizes how far of an impact the math teacher has. Everyday person. He wasn't a rabbi. He wasn't an inspirational speaker. He was a math teacher, right? I would have been falling asleep in his class because I don't like math. He's such an inspiration, such a change in this person's life, my friend's life. Then he does the interview with me. He's like, I'm set. Okay, fine. I can do whatever I want to. He's already cooked. We never really know what's going to inspire somebody else. We never know where that light, that little smile. Someone is in a dark place. Someone's having a bad day, a hard day. A smile will just change their world entirely. A smile will just inspire them. You never know. We're all Kohanim, though. We're all responsible for this job. We're all responsible for lighting up the world. And when we do that, we can really change the world. We can change the people in it. And we can make the world a lighter place and ultimately bring the Bayis Shlishi, Mashiach, and the third Beis Hamikdash. We can have the real menorah shining outward to the world and just lighten up everything. So that's Shabbat Shalom. Good Shabbos. Thank you so much. And have a wonderful day.